Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:04 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is December 22nd. I'm recording a little earlier today because I've got some engagements this afternoon. But I thought I would kick off with Ethereum because the price is hovering here around 4,000. So we've had definitely some steadying action, and there's been a sequence of higher reaction lows since the spike lower in early December. And of course, we still have the sequence of lower rally highs as well, although arguably the move we had yesterday would have at least begun to pressure that sequence. And 4,000 is a big psychological level because it was the previous peaks, or at least the region of the previous peaks. And we have pretty much unwound most of the overbought condition relative to the trend mean, and it has been an area of support on previous occasions. So, as I said, we're at a rather critical juncture. And then, of course, we have news today that one of the NFTs, the Bored Ape Yacht Club, sold for $800,000, or the equivalent of 199 Ethereum units today. So there's still plenty of life left in the NFT sector, by all accounts. And that might seem like an extraordinary sum for what is effectively a easily copyable. One of the things that I think is interesting is that the sales pitch for these sorts of NFTs is based upon rarity value, and that there will only ever be 10,000 of these Bored Ape pictures made available. But these types of metaverse and NFT type or things, they don't have any real moat. There's nothing to stop anyone else from making a new one, or for a falling out between the celebrities that are supporting these things and then going off and starting their own. So quite where the value resides is obviously very questionable, but there's still lots of money floating around. And that, I think, is perhaps the biggest bullish case for why anyone would be interested in these things, because we're also starting to see that money is flowing back into the Fangman shares, with Elon Musk today announcing, or I guess yesterday announcing, that he is done with his sale program. Well, the share price had an upside key reversal yesterday, followed through on the upside in here today, so that suggests a low of at least near-term significance. And I think it is pivotal here that we are right in the region of the previous peak, and not all that far away from the 200-day moving average, certainly a lot closer than we were at the peak back in early November. So that would be, I think, notable if it were occurring in isolation. But we've also started to see that some of the other oversold big mega-cap companies are also beginning to find support. So Meta platforms, or Facebook, is firming from the region of the trend mean. Netflix has also begun to demonstrate support in the region of the trend mean and the upper side of the underlying range as well. And Amazon has been in this lengthy range for a year. In fact, it's more than a year, and it still holds the upward bias, and we are starting to see some evidence of support beginning to come back in. Some of these are more convincing than others. So obviously, we need to see upside follow through. And it's also relevant here that the if you combine those, the 8 Fangman plus Tesla shares, and compare them to the total market cap of the US markets, it's up to 23.3%. It was a meaningful advance in here today. And it's breaking out of this range that's been forming now for more than a year. So as long as this ratio is trending higher, well, there is not going to be any push factor for all the people that have been invested in these companies and all those that are looking to buy the dips and have been waiting for Elon Musk to give them the all clear that he has stopped selling. Well, that's likely to be rocket fuel for these shares once more. And we continue to see that companies like Apple remain well bid. So it has rebounded from the recent lows, but more importantly than that, the size of the pullback has been comparatively minor, and it's still holding even these very small ranges. It's holding the upper side of that range. And if we then just look at more back history, well, there's no question in the fact that the pace of the advance has picked up, and that we do have an overbought condition relative to the trend mean, but it's still sustaining relatively minor corrections. And as long as that remains the case, well, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So then, of course, if we just take another step back and look at the wider S&P 500, it's still holding the 4,500 point level. And we've had two good-sized upward dynamics from tests of that level over the course of the last 3 weeks. And as long as it is putting in one range above another and continuing to bounce at from the regions of previous peaks, well, then this is a staircase uptrend, and we can anticipate that the pattern will be repeated. And as long as that remains the case, it's a consistent trend, regardless of how long it's been going on for, or how steep the trend is overall. So, of course, then the question is, what would be something that could curtail this wonderful imbalance between supply and demand? Well, 10-year Treasury yields have not pushed on the upside. So, if we were to see, for example, Treasury yields cruising through 1.8% and pushing on to new high ground, and that would be in direct response to the expectation the Federal Reserve is aggressively raising interest rates, well, that would be a headwind for stock markets. But as long as yields are relatively well contained, well, nobody, I think, is going to be really under any duress. And the yield curve spread has been quite inert over the course of this week, but it's not rallying. So we're still in an environment where markets are expecting some tightness in interest rates, but not so much to curtail the flow of liquidity, or indeed that it's going to act as a headwind to growth overall. So we're still in this environment where stocks generally tend to do well for the first interest rate hike. It's only after a succession of interest rate hikes that we would really should be starting to become more cautious. And of course, if we were to see the high yield spread really marching higher, well, then that would obviously be an additional source of risk in the market, but that's not occurring. The high yield spread popped on the upside at the end of November and then has been contracting all of December. So that's also removing a source of worry from the market as well. Then we can think about what's going on in Europe. And the natural gas price continues to march higher, and it was a little softer in here today, but not in a really dynamic manner. The euro, however, is beginning to steady, and we've had a meaningful decline over the course of the last 6 months. So it could quite easily unwind the short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean and still be in a medium-term downtrend. And I don't think that there's much appetite in Europe for a strong currency. And they're certainly not going to be raising rates with this deflationary, a short-term inflationary force that's coming through because of higher electricity generating costs because of this natural gas surge, and then the shutting down of four of France's nuclear reactors. So that's obviously going to put upward pressure on inflation, but it's going to curtail economic expansion. So ultimately, it'll be a deflationary force, and there's just no way that the ECB is going to raise rates into that environment. So we might see some respite in the downtrend for the euro, but there's going to be plenty of supply. And any time we see even a modest weakness in the US dollar versus some of its bigger trading partners, then gold perks up, and it was up $13 in here today. So this has been a very inert period of trading for gold. And the one thing I think anyone who has any experience of trading gold will be aware of is that these periods of inert trading don't last. And when they are eventually resolved, we get dynamic moves. And we had some experience of that in August of this year. We had a period of inert trading and it broke heavily on the downside. We had a period of inert trading at the end of October and then it broke heavily on the upside. Now we've had another period of inert trading, and I think the odds are that it's going to break on the upside again. The one thing, of course, that should be at the back of the minds of anyone interested in gold is that there is no country wants to raise interest rates. Now, some of them haven't got any choice because they're dealing with significant problems relating to inflation. But nobody's rushing out to do it, and we have negative real interest rates just about everywhere. People are worried about inflation, but I think perhaps they're more worried about deflation. And some of the inflationary forces are going to moderate in 2022. We can see that the Baltic Dry Index has now broken downwards. So it's coming back down towards the upper side of the base formation. And around this 2000 level, it will need to find support if the breakout is going to be sustained. So this obviously is in response to either less demand for ships or more supply of ships, or potentially that some of the ships that have been taken out of circulation because they're sitting around with cargo on board and not being able to be unloaded, that the potentially the bottlenecks are starting to free up. So there's any one of three potential outcomes, but one thing for certain is that everybody has been complaining about how much more it costs to transport containers. And that is going to become less of an issue in 2022, and that's deflationary. Or at least it's going to take some of the animus out of the or the pressure that companies are experiencing in having to raise prices. Then if the shipping rates are coming down, well then the LME Metals Index is still very firm. And it's firming from the region of the trend mean. Now it did have the failed upside break about 2.5 months ago, but it is firming from the region of the trend mean. So that's quite impressive in terms of that move. And copper prices are remaining well bid. So that's also, I think, rather important because copper has been consolidating for most of the last year. And when we think about this advance, there's been an awful lot of doubt being expressed by investors because everybody knows what happened in 2011. We had this incredible decline in 2008. We had a really impressive rebound after the credit crisis because of the massive stimulative efforts deployed by governments and central banks. And then it rolled over because all of that stimulus ran out. There was more worries about inflation. There was more worries, and there was action. In terms of withdrawing quantitative easing. And industrial resources prices rolled over, and the dollar started to firm, and ASEAN markets, which had led in the advance, also rolled over, and emerging market currency started to devalue. So there was really a really significant deterioration in demand for industrial resources, and we had this profound decline. So now, as we look at the parallels and the differences, there has been this big argument about are we really going to have a big new move in commodities? And I think that the reason it's different on this occasion is because we have got plans for infrastructure development everywhere. It's no longer simply about China's demand for commodities. In fact, if anything, it's the polar opposite of what we had in 2011, because it was China's demand was sustaining the price, and it was waning demand everywhere else. Whereas today, it is perhaps less demand growth from China and more demand growth from everywhere else. When we look at the number of wind turbines that the UK has built and is building, and the size of those things, where one of those GE turbines is going to come into service in 2025 and has a generating capacity of 1.3 gigawatts. So it has one turbine has enough of generating capacity to power over 1 million homes. And obviously that's really incredible in terms of the size and scale of one installation. But of course, they don't work when the wind's not blowing. Now, one might argue that in the North Sea the wind is always blowing, but that's not actually the case. And that also means that there's going to have to be backup. So, some batteries will be deployed, and then small modular reactors will also eventually enter service. And Rolls-Royce has been signing contracts to build some of those. And this all represents really significant infrastructure development. Now, oil prices remain quite firm, and they were up another dollar in here today. And this is increasingly looking like a higher reaction low, so we can anticipate that we're going to see higher prices from here, and that perhaps a run back above the $80 to $85 area can't be ruled out at all. But ultimately, we're seeing increasing numbers of countries deploying assets to circumvent dependence on both oil and natural gas. And with these extremely high prices for natural gas in Europe, and the upward pressure that's come to bear because of cold weather in Russia, so they're not sending out any natural gas at the moment. The geopolitical implications of that are significant, and obviously Europe in particular is very sensitive to that, so they're going to increasingly do whatever is necessary to become energy independent, and not least because the USA is already energy independent, so it's now no longer a nice to have, but it's a geopolitical imperative. So, in fact, everyone thinks about the effect of carbon credits, and carbon credits are susceptible to some additional consolidation. The uptrend, which had been doing nothing but rise, has lost consistency. So there is certainly scope here for a significant retracement. But the significant additional advance that we've seen in natural gas is probably doing more to change minds in Europe about dependence on foreign assets, energy assets, than anything that the carbon credit market might do. So that's going to represent a massive demand driver for industrial resources. So we're going to see continued demand for copper. And I think one thing that's particularly relevant is that cobalt prices have also been rising. And cobalt, more than any other commodity, collapsed in 2019. And there have been significant efforts underway to try and stop using it and find some other battery chemistries. So the fact that cobalt prices are now rising again, well, that speaks to significant demand for battery technology. So it's, I think, it is, there's been an argument at least that we don't have a secular bull market in industrial resources beginning. But if copper continues to find support in the region of the trend mean, well, then and then breaks on to new high ground and follows some of the other industrial resources like tin into high new ground, and those breakouts are sustained, well, then that is grounds for a secular bull market argument. And it's going to be a different bull market overall, because the last big bull market was really about iron ore and it was about oil. Whereas on this occasion, it's going to be much more about copper and lithium and anything to do with battery technology or electricity generating capacity. So that means that it will be an industrial resource-led bull market, but that it'll be different industrial resources than last time round, and that the kinds of countries that did well the last time out, like Brazil, because of its massive iron ore exports, are going to perhaps figure less prominently than countries with large copper export capacity, like Chile and Peru, and then then potentially also Bolivia, because of its lithium supply, or indeed Argentina, because of its lithium supply. So it's we can just think about it in terms of that history often rhymes, but it's not repeated. And that also suggests that we're going to have a significant additional rationale for why there should be bull markets in other jurisdictions, because the emerging markets will also be deploying these kinds of assets. Nobody wants to be energy dependent when there are viable solutions to become energy independent. And then they will be subsidized. So then everyone will want to get in on this particular party. And it's likely to be a rather beneficial environment from an investor's perspective. Now, when we think about the continued advance in technology, well, ultimately, this is the resources bull market will remain a stealth bull market until those technology companies roll over. And that's unlikely if interest rates don't rise. And I don't believe that we're going to see a lot of interest rate rises. We might see one, maybe two next year, but perhaps not much more than that, because rest of populations are in no mood to tolerate a recession, and they certainly aren't in a mood to tolerate the kind of fiscal austerity and loss of benefits that would be entailed in paying back massive government debts. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.